Your Steve Jones Show podcast audio is loading. Steve Jones Show podcast, sponsored by Kratzer Insurance Agency, Mount Pleasant Mills in Northumberland, and online at KratzerInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hola, buenos dias, trevian, guten haben.
Yo.
And we welcome all those living in Appalachia too.
I speak for the common man. Yo.
You are the common man. Wow. You doing okay? I mean, this is kind of a rough time for you. I mean, you can barely participate. You can barely participate in the show now.
I'm fine. No, I'm fine. I'm just not jumping up and down because the Steelers got a win. I mean, I'm a realist. I realize that the Jets have Rex Ryan as their head coach. So it was a gift. Now, can you string more than one win to, with another one? You know, a one game is not a winning streak. And that, they need a long winning streak to get me excited again.
Wow, you are just one depressed puppy, aren't you?
Just a realist, my friend.
Realist?
A realist.
A realist? Wow. I don't know. Now, a guy I think is a realist is Mark Wogenrich from the Allentown Morning Call. And Mark joins us. Mark, welcome. Great to have you with us. You know, when you sat down, you had some options the other night as to what you're right. I mean, in the end, what ruled the day for you and which direction did you go in?
Wow. Big picturing. I kind of settled on that on the final drive of regulation. I mean, the fact that, I'll be honest, you know, in our business now, we have to write stories all the time, constantly. So I was writing a story post on the website, and after the pass interference penalty on Adrian Amos, I was writing the Michigan had won story. And essentially, I looked up and I see Penn State's got the ball with 20 seconds left, or 50 seconds left on the 20-yard line. And I thought, I'd better postpone that because I know how much, you know, I think I know how fanatical Bill O'Brien is about two-minute drills and just the potential for that to happen with, you know, I'm going to take the freshman part out of it, but with Christian Hackenberg at quarterback, I thought was a really compelling moment, just obviously of that game, but also of the season, because that sort of game, or that sort of moment, if you're successful at that, man, sky's the limit, you know, following that. And the way they drove down still, I mean, 20, they didn't even use half the time they were allotted without a timeout that they had smartly used after that pass interference call to be able to tie the game. And then for that moment, I think you saw that moment also of Bill O'Brien when he's got his two fingers up, you know, issuing basically the edict to go for two and then pulling that back. I think that kind of encapsulated maybe him, the way he coaches and his team kind of all in that moment. For me, that was really the game. That was the A story of the game, but there were a number of, you know, A1s, A2s, and A3s, and A4s going on. Just unbelievable 4.5 hours.
Yeah, there were so many plots, subplots that went with it along the way on both sides. For you, what was the deadline like for the paper, and what kind of saving grace can the web be in those moments?
Yeah, the deadline for the paper was ridiculous. I don't know how many words were spelled correctly in those stories. I haven't gone back to look. I'm kind of afraid to. But it can be a saving grace because then you can give yourself a moment to think about things and really try to recontextualize and also to do a little bit of post-game reporting. I think some of the interesting things were the defensive players. Kyle Boblitz was among them, DeQuan Jones, who said they kind of played angry after that Indiana game. They, you know, while noting that they had put it behind them, they said that they were playing with a bit of a chip. I mean, that game, they weren't thrilled with the way they played. They weren't, clearly their coaches weren't thrilled with the way they played. And that meant a lot to them to come out and play, you know, points aside, play a really, I mean, a pretty good defensive game overall. I mean, what was it, 27 yards rushing for Michigan from their backfield? I think less than a yard per carry. I mean, if you're going to remove Devin Gardner
right.
from the stats. And then also the fact that John Butler afterwards, the defensive coordinator, really, I think he kind of laid his cards on the table in saying, look, this is the kind of game that we're going to have to play. We're going to have to play with spirit and fire and passion because we do have, we have our limitations. He didn't go into them, but, I mean, he said things like read between the lines, and I think you know what I'm saying. His defense just has certain limitations that it's going to have to work around, work with, and work through this year. But he feels like that they are on the right track. And that game, I think, gave him really something that he can show and say, look, these are the great things that we did. We certainly did make our mistakes, but these are the really good things that we did. And let's continue doing those and try not to worry about the 1,000 yards that we gave up, and all, you know, 80 points or whatever that was to Central Florida and Indiana.
He also went with a five-man front several times. Mm-hmm. He floated C.J. Alonian, but he did that against Indiana as well. And then he took a page out of Joe's old defensive book because Joe put in the 4-4 years ago because he stuck up Malcolm Willis. And it was Joe that came up with the 4-4 a long time ago. The fact, though, that he incorporated different looks, what do you think that meant to the outcome of the game?
I think that meant a huge amount to their inability to run the ball beyond Gardner. Mm-hmm. I think that was key, and it's, you know, especially with those looks, the way they were, you know, what they were showing him, and then the stops that they were able to make with them early, and also, you know, with Michigan, I think maybe it might have led Michigan to its reserved attitude or its, you know, its approach later in the game. That the 4-4 idea, that was pretty interesting to me because I had remembered those old defenses using those sorts of things, and it also that circles back to the idea that Don Butler was talking about after the game that there's really he kept repeating over and over there's really nothing new that I'm showing that we're showing here, we're just trying to do what we do better. It's not necessarily new. It might have been new situationally, but it's not new within the game itself.
Then, of course, on offense, I think the Allen Robinson discussion is something we could have any time we want at any moment we want. But the growth and maturation, you know, which is an ongoing process, and it's going to be because he's a freshman of Christian Hackenberg, I think is something that, at least from my perspective, is fun to watch. What about your perspective?
And really, it just I thought I boiled it down to the essence of that, of those five plays. Really,
yeah.
You know, one of them was a spike. He really had almost he had nothing to think about in that scenario, which is kind of odd to say, but he had no time to work with. They probably have a limited number of plays they're going to run in those situations. A 2-minute draw, I'm sure, he's got specific site plays for each of those downs, so he probably wasn't given, you know, a real wide load to work with and think about. It's almost like that situation, aside from the pressure of the moment, that it was the perfect spot for him to compartmentalize because he was able to say, okay, I can remove everything. Basically, I can essentially remove every running play because they really didn't run the ball until this knee. So I don't have to worry about those. I don't have to worry about checking off, you know, a run block or things like that. I don't have to worry about other situational things. I'm probably not going to throw, like, you know, the wide receiver screen pass, the bubble screen or something like that, because we're probably not going to try to run a ton and use a ton of clock. So I think he was able to whittle it down to the point where he had limited things to worry about, and that I'm sure that helped him. But and then you couple that with just the physical nature of what he can do. I mean, we've seen it now, six games, that he can you know, as he learns through his way through the offense, it's a huge help to be able to make the physical throws. But he did the one throw to Brandon Felder, not even on that drive, but an earlier touchdown throw. He was in the pocket. He was kind of leaning back. Still rifled one to the back of the end zone. I think even Brady Hoke said not a lot of guys are going to be able to make that throw.
What is your opinion of college overtime? The format.
Yeah, it's the format. I guess it's as good. I don't have another solution aside from just going out and maybe playing like the NFL. I like the exciting nature of it. It feels a little bit. I mean, it does feel forced, and it feels like, you know, are you taking something away from the fact of what these two teams did? But there's no doubt that it's just viscerally thrilling. I mean, just that. Of getting the short field and then being forced to do something, and after two overtimes and being forced to basically go for two if you score a touchdown. I really like that nature of it. That is just, I mean, when it went to overtime, I thought, just the way college will operate, that's about as compelling, a moment in college sports as you can get. I mean, the penalty shots in the NHL, that sort of thing. Is it fair? I don't know. I don't know necessarily it's fair if you're rewarding the team that might have played the better game, but there's no doubt it's exciting.
Yeah, I don't know how you determine which team played the better game over 60 minutes. They ended up tied.
Exactly. Yeah.
They ended up tied. That's why they're in overtime. The only thing I'd... Because the NFL system isn't perfect to me either. I mean, that's the other part. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite, and I'm not sure what system is. But I look at this, you put the ball on the 25-yard line, and except for field goals or extra points, special teams are out of it. That's right. Why I'm just, I don't have a perfect system in mind in my head anyway. Say, they should do this. I'm like, but I always find it interesting.
I like the fact that it's a bit of an extended field point, and instead of just dropping it at the 10-yard line. That doesn't seem to me to be fair, because it does widen what an offense and a defense have to do. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to basically make it a red zone game, that might not be fair. I like the 25, but then how far would you stretch it? I mean, would you go to the 50-yard line?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And then force teams to make extended drives, and that's at the 25, you're basically looking at four plays, unless you're getting a couple of first down. I don't know that you want to extend the field too far back. The visceral nature of it, I think, is unmatched. So.
All right, now moving forward. In moving forward, this is the second bye week over a three-week span. Most coaches, I think, just would like to have one bye week. In your opinion, is it a plus or a minus that Penn State has a bye week after that?
It can be a plus, I guess, because you want to get guys as much rest as possible before you play Ohio State, clearly. And this is a team, above all others, probably in the Big Ten, that needs as much time to get, to get players healthy. But I can't imagine that going back onto the field yesterday, Bill O'Brien and his staff didn't want to be saying to them, okay, here's what Ohio State's going to do this Saturday against us. I have a hard time believing that you want to take that moment and then box it up for a week and go back and say, okay, let's run our scrimmage with the run-ons and then the guys, the second and third team guys, and let's do that, and let's just kind of have a limited practice. On the flip side, I think he had just said, Bill O'Brien just said on the Big Ten conference call that Monday's practice was limited anyway, because after you play for 4.5 hours, guys are going to be worn out. So in that sense, after playing the long overtime game, it's, specifically and situationally, it's great to have the bye here. I still think that they want to run. I think they would want to run straight to Columbus after that and try to go up against them as soon as possible.
Mark, it's always a pleasure. Appreciate the time very much.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
We appreciate it. As always, Mark Wolgenrich, one of the best, somebody I always enjoy talking to, intelligent, great perspective, and
Doesn't Wayne Moener complain? Let's
see. That's his problem.
Did Buhner ever come back?
Yeah, he reappeared finally. I don't know where I don't know if there was.
Bob.
Listen, all I know is there was some smoke coming out back. I don't know if he was having a barbecue or what.
Bob, seriously, I don't know what you. I don't really care. I'm just glad you're back.
Thanks.
All right, today's show brought to you by our good friends at Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, Northumberland. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout.
Like a 2010 Ford Escape XLT, one of the most affordable fuel-efficient SUVs, just $15,995. A one-owner, newly inspected and fully serviced 2012 Ford Focus SEL, $13,998. 2010 Dodge Nitro SE comes with warranty. Lowest price promise, $17,989. 2011 Ford F-150 XLT, an outdoorsman and contractor's choice, just $29,494. And a 2012 Hyundai Sonata 2.4-liter new tires, just $14,993. Call 570-286-7746.
All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout.
See the full inventory and schedule a test drive at sunburymotors.com.
At the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Shopping for insurance to save money is not an easy thing. What if I told you there's good news for Pennsylvania residents searching to save money on homeowners, auto insurance, RVs, motorcycles, and more? What if I told you you didn't have to sacrifice local personal service? Then call or visit online the Kratzer Insurance Agency in Mount Pleasant Mills and Northumberland, serving the area now for 50 years.
Hi, this is Kim Ebright. We are proud to offer Safeco Insurance at a very competitive rate. Some customers have saved as much as 50% off their premium.
Safeco has been around since 1923 and in 2008 became part of the Liberty Mutual Insurance, a name well known and trusted in the insurance industry. Start saving and be safe with Safeco and Kratzer Insurance.
Standing together against whatever. Family, friendship, security. The Kratzer Insurance Agency.
It's one thing about being in the Sunbury Motors studio,
the
as
disco
opposed
ball?
To Sunbury Motors East, okay, is that I can go through a painless afternoon and watch and not watch Kevin dance to this. Bob, on the other hand, feeling like a hostage.
You missed the disco ball, admit it.
You know, Steve, that last interview, that was the second sports beat writer for Penn State that had written the story before the game was over.
Yeah, and I feel badly for them because deadlines do that to them. That's the problem they have. You're talking about really good, top-notch pros. And, of course, I kid them about Dewey beating Truman, teaching
sure.
boys a lesson. You know, but that's only a joke because, they sit there and, like, they're looking at the clock the entire time. There's a certain point that the quote, the paper has to go to bed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and they're stuck. Now, the one saving grace happens to be the web, you know, where they can update through the web. And, of course, you can get access to it anytime. That's a big, big plus. At the same time, the paper doesn't want to be wrong either.
No.
So now you're trying to make up for it, file, because all these guys have deadlines. And sometimes, I mean, there have been points. I've talked to Dick. I'll tell you, here's a tough one. The NCAA National Championship game. It's on a Monday night. It starts at 9:22 Eastern time. The game is not over until approximately 11:15 to 11:30. Your deadline's probably midnight. I mean, these guys will run on the court, and it looks obnoxious, like they're being obnoxious. They're right in their faces right away. But they need a quote, one, somewhere, because they need it at the end of the story. Because they don't have the time. They're not being obnoxious.
No.
They're out of time.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, and that's a huge part of this. And that's why I have great respect for the writers, tremendous respect. Now, people may not agree with their viewpoints, which is fine, especially a columnist. But a columnist is supposed to get you to think. You know, and that's what they do. That's what we try to do on this show. This is kind of like our version of an on-air newspaper column. It just lasts 2 hours, and it's also filled with lunacy.
Exactly.
So, you know, but that's what it is. You're trying to provoke thought. So we're trying to provoke thought on this show, pro and con. If you don't agree with us, you don't. Now, let's see what Len in Lewisburg thinks. Hi, Lenny, how are you?
Just peachy keen.
Well, there's no surprise this veteran campaigner, Len.
I've missed your show the last couple of days.
Len, I have to scold you. What is going on, Len?
This is not acceptable.
Go ahead, Len. That's okay, bud. We're just kidding.
I'm a big Zach Zwinek fan. And
yeah, okay.
I was watching the game on the radio the other day, and I had to walk away from it for a bit. I come back and they're making this big brouhaha about Zwinek, you know, putting the ball on the ground and then setting his butt over there on the cooling it off on the bench. And I'm going that. And later on in the game, they needed somebody with 500 horsepower like that, and that seemed like a hell of a punishment for what was that all about? That they couldn't even use the guy in a, you know, to get 18 inches someplace. It was I don't quite understand that the punishment seemed way out of whack with what he did when other guys fumbled in the game and got nothing out of it. I'll just shut up.
You mean Allen Robinson?
The Golden Boy. Hey, he's good. No. Don't be wrong. But he sort of gave them a gift, and nobody said a thing.
Sure.
Is Zwinek,
well, you know.
But one other little point, quick. As far as I'm concerned, Zwinek didn't fumble that ball. I think there are probably about three of his rib cage stuck in that other guy's helmet. And, that guy did everything but disassemble him to get that ball out from under his arms.
I will disagree with you on that because I watched the replay of it last night. It just turned out that's what was on in the room. and James Ross put his hand in there and just stripped it out. He did not. That was not an explosive hit that did that. It was just literally when watching the replay, Ross stuck his hand in and just dislodged the ball. So Bill took him out of the game, which he did last year when Zwinek fumbled. And Belton got into a groove, I think, and that's why Bill decided that he would just continue with Belton because Belton just was the guy the rest of the way. Lynch didn't get in there. Zach Zwinek did not get back in there. I think Bill O'Brien felt that for him, this was the comfortable way to go, so he went in that particular direction. You're right, there are a couple moments where he kind of felt the diesel was perfect for a spot, but Bill decided not to go in that direction. I'm sure the fumble had everything to do with that decision.
I'm sure of it. Either that or he said something about his sister when he walked off the field, you know what I mean?
Doubt that.
Not a good move. That would not be a good move.
No, it's Belton had the hand, and they did, I'm not just about out of nitroglycerin, so I'm going to have to hang up and not watch for another couple weeks. And my heart won't take it. So.
Isn't that funny? Steve felt the same way on Saturday night.
Yeah. Hey, guys, thank you.
Len, thank you. Bob, was I like that after the game?
You were as
not
calm and low-key. As I said, the heart rate and blood pressure didn't move for about 7 hours in your body.
I believe Bob used the word comatose at one point.
No.
It was that calm.
I saw him before at the tailgate, and I saw him at the post-game tailgate. Not an iota of difference.
Sorry. Crotzer Insurance sponsors Tuesdays, and we're thrilled. Mount Pleasant Mills, Northumberland.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
What am I doing, renting the two of you out in the mornings?
Yeah.
Really?
We're the players to be named later.
I mean, really. I mean, I should get a finder's fee.
I should have you as my agent and get a 10% off the top.
Doggone Lawrence is out there, like, looking around saying, geez, the afternoon guy's got it going. What can I steal? I mean, what's next? I have to be on there?
I think you're lined up for next Thursday, actually.
I'm not surprised.
Bartlett's already doing the Facebook Twitter updates all morning then, too. So, you know, she's helping out with that. So.
Now, we have a Red Sox.
What's going on? Whoa. We got like a little family thing going here in the afternoon.
Yeah,
you know, all of a sudden it's out of nowhere. And, you know, all of a sudden I got like the free agents over. It's like, well, where can I go next?
It's just like Major League Baseball. Whoever comes up with the most paper.
Suddenly out of nowhere, a couple guys have good rookie years and I got problems.
I was going to say that Boston and Detroit are playing starting at 4 o'clock. Do we have any updates?
Yeah, it is scoreless after one.
Oh, okay.
There's a shock. That thing's been scoreless after one every game.
Yeah. Is it Verlander for Detroit today?
Verlander for the Tigers and John Lackey for the Red Sox.
It'll be scoreless after 5 or 6 then.
This is going to take a while.
I'm just curious. Let's see. Was there the
Dodgers will play tonight. All right.
The Red Sox do not have a hit, and the Tigers have 2 hits so far in the top of 2.
Yeah, the Red Sox have not had a single hit in the first inning of a game in the series. In fact, they don't have a hit in any of the first 5 innings of the series so far.
Salty right, strikes out swinging, by the way.
How about Yasiel Puig last night? A lot of people have been commenting, oh, he threw away the bat. What do you know? You know, he's celebrating too much. Well, I'm sick and tired of the, you know, everybody has to be robotic in this game. It's the playoffs. It's all right to show emotion. It's okay to be happy.
Yes.
Okay? I mean, it's nothing wrong with happiness. I mean, listen to Lawrence every morning, how happy he is. All right. So, we're entitled to be happy, to be excited about something. It's a big moment in the game. Now, what he did wrong was when he did flip away the bat. All right. In this game, at this level, at this particular moment, especially in the playoffs, you need to just assume that the ball is in the park.
That's the only issue I had.
Right. And the one thing that the young man has to understand, what was the temperature last night in Los Angeles? It was in the 50s, wasn't it? It was a cool night.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a cool night last night. When you get to this time of the year in this country, and whether it's St. Louis, especially Boston, Detroit, and even Los Angeles last night, the cool, heavier air moves in. The ball doesn't travel as far. I'm willing to wager that if he hit that exact same ball in the month of July or August, that thing was maybe 10, 15 rows out in Dodger Stadium. You look at the other day, the home run that Ortiz hit, he crushed that ball. It barely made the bullpen. That's 380 feet. And there was a ball that Scott Drew hit that if that ball was hit in July or August at Fenway, that was easily in the seats, and Torrey Hunter caught it at the base of the wall. Because the heavier air that you have, the cooler, heavier air that you have at this time of the year keeps the ball in play. Now, he doesn't know that. Because it's 84 literally in Havana today. Okay? It's 84 in Havana today. So he's used to, no matter what time of the year, it's always warm and the ball travels. And I think that's something that Don Mattingly is going to have to tell him. He said, look, through an interpreter, of course. Yo, dog, you hit the ball, you just run out because, you know, it's that time of the year the ball doesn't travel here like it did in July and August.
But you know what?
And that's all you have to tell him, and he won't flip the bat because he thought he had a home run.
Well, no here's question. The thing, though. I don't really even have a big deal about the celebration at third base. But
flipping the bat,
putting your arms in the air, I would rather see him wait to make sure that was a home run before you did that. Although I don't make a big deal about it. I mean, I think it's exuberance. I think that's fine. I don't think it's a big deal. If I were a Dodgers fan or you know, in the management, I would say, you know, make sure that's a home run before you do that. But here's the thing that nobody's talking about. Not only did he get into the trot right away and put his hands in the air and start kind of staring the ball down, but he's still got a stand-up triple.
Right.
He's still got a stand-up triple.
Yeah, well, this goes back to what I said the other day. I've never seen a player make more mental mistakes and make up for it with pure athletic talent.
I mean, he
makes more mental mistakes than anybody I've seen play, But he has so much natural talent, he makes up for it almost every single time, which I find to be remarkable.
You know, if he were a horse, he'd be Secretariat. He's just that talented.
You know,
just
an athlete. Bob and I watched the replay here a few minutes ago, and you know, even if the throw's online, I think he still slides into third easily. It may not be a stand-up triple, but it's still a clean triple. And he did that with going into a trot immediately.
Right.
That's the scary part of this that nobody's talking about. Right. You know,
and by the way, I do not think he gets an inside the park home run if he sprints out of the box. Okay, I don't think that.
Well, yeah. I think he rounds third, but I don't think he gets to home.
No, I don't think he does either.
You know, there's one way that St. Louis could have addressed that issue rather than have, I think, Beltran or somebody else make comments. Just a high, hard fastball near his chin next time up.
Yeah.
Or if you do like they did a few months ago, you put one up near his chin, one behind him, another one behind him.
Called putting manners on the rookie.
But you know what, guys? You really can't do that this time.
No.
I agree with you. You really can't afford to do that.
And the reason you can't do that right now, because number one, do you want to risk suspension?
No, obviously.
I mean, do I need – let's take Adam Wainwright was last night's pitcher, okay? Adam Wainwright's last night's pitcher. What if they deem him he's suspended for the rest of the series? What good did you just do your team? None.
Okay. Well, but you can make that pitch inside and tight without, you know, making it bad where you get suspended. I mean, you just don't give him anything he's going to extend on for the rest of the game. We'll put it that way.
Yeah. Well. But they won last night 3-0, and so far the Cardinals are hitting, 133 in the series, and they're up 2-1.
And by the way, I am not endorsing throwing at batters, by the way. I'm just saying that there are ways to do it that are acceptable in Major League Baseball, and throwing inside is okay.
You know, this will reveal a little bit of my age, but can you imagine what would have happened if Bob Gibson were on the mound for the Cardinals?
Well, I think that I personally think that maybe there would be an international incident.
Exactly. We'd have Cuba invading Key West or something over this one.
Yeah, I mean, what are you doing to our guy Puig? So, well, but again, I had no problem with that whatsoever. None. You know, except if I'm Mattingly, I tell him, hey, look, big guy, ball does not travel far this time of the year. Move. Get out of the box. Don't admire what's going to hit the wall.
But he is a raw talent.
No,
just incredible.
He's yeah, but, you know, they have all these, you know, there's a silent code in baseball.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, the same one where you have the pitcher bunt with a runner on first? Really? I know.
He won't let that go. He won't let it go.
Changing gears just real quickly on another topic.
I don't want to, Bob.
Okay. Fair.
Now that you guys have quit and gone to another show.
On the mark. We're taking it over. Yeah. It'll be a coup. Kevin will be sitting in the throne.
I don't definitely want to talk about that topic.
Where are you going with that?
What do you wish to talk about now, Bob?
College basketball. Isn't this the time when practices are starting to happen? And
started 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and things are starting to heat up.
I had a long talk today with Patrick Chambers about all this. They're 2 weeks in here, and he said, look, it's a mixed bag. He said they've really tried to – they don't go every day. And, you know, in fact, they take a couple days off a week initially. He says it actually has a negative effect on recruiting because this is actually a prime – that last 2 weeks were prime recruiting times in the past. So they've decided, you know, that, you know, they're trying to get some guys on the road to take a look at recruits while still trying to practice. He likes his team a lot so far. He feels the offense is ahead of the defense, but they also had the advantage of going in the foreign tour. But he's not totally on board yet, and he said he's really not going to have an evaluation on whether the extra 2 weeks, which is the first time the men have done it, the women have done it for 3 years now, but this is the first time the men have done it. He thinks that one of the offshoots will be that November basketball actually might look better than November's in the past. That the quality of basketball in November might be better. But his team is cut in shape. I had a long talk today with Allen Roberts, the transfer from Miami of Ohio, DJ Newbill, who last he said getting Frazier's great, and he said the fact he played so much point guard last year is going to be a huge plus for him because he says now I can handle the ball, and I can confidently handle the ball in certain situations. It's going to be a very tough team to press. I don't think Penn State's going to be pressed much this year. Competition on the floor much better. Donovan Jack is now the center. You have Ross Travis can play three positions on the floor. He'll start at forward. They're going to be a small team on the floor. Allen Roberts is going to play a wing. Frazier is going to be back there with Newbill, but they can have bench players now. When they get to December 22nd, Johnny Johnson's going to be eligible. He's been nursing a sore foot, but he played really well in the blue-white scrimmage the other day. You know, the freshman, Cam Woodward from Minnesota. I've watched this kid practice. You're going to love watching this kid play. Geno Thorpe's a real player. Peyton Banks has been banged up a bit. Julian Moore's better than I expected him to be. So they're underway. Today, being October 15th, would have been the official start of basketball practice, like it has in the past.
Yes.
But they've tacked on this extra 2 weeks. I personally don't like it. I think it's too long to have official practices. I mean, if football starts a month ahead of its first game with no other hours added in, men's basketball has that four-hour rule in the offseason. You can go 4 hours with these guys during the week. I mean, during the off-season times, and they'd be doing that right now with them leading into full practice. Adding the extra 2 weeks, I don't know. I'm not quite on board with that, guys. I'm not quite there with this one. I think that one's overstepping just a bit. I think it's too many practices that they have to go through.
I'm glad you said that because that's my point today. Bringing up basketball, today used to be the official start, October 15th, and they've been going at it. And it just seems that it really prolongs a long season for these kids.
And what's interesting is that when you look at the extra 2 weeks, you'd think coaches would be like, oh, yeah, nah, Patrick was – when I talked to him today, he's really not quite on board with it, but knows he has to do it because everybody else is doing it. So, and he says the offense is ahead of the defense. We'll come back, celebrate a milestone moment in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, Northumberland, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. And this is, I remember in game two, they did a great juxtaposition between Robert Redford, the natural, hitting the light tower, and this moment. Kirk Gibson, game one, backdoor slider, gone.
High fly ball into right field. She is gone! In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
The great Vin Scully. Still great to this day. Now, let's say do a little backstory on Gibson. Yeah, of course, he'd been hurt, can barely move. He can't play. I mean, he's the National League MVP. He can't play. So they're in the ninth inning, and Lasorda, the wheels are turning. You guys ever meet Lasorda?
No.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, at the Rose Bowl practice one day, he showed up, and he's, like, regaling us with stories left and right. It was unbelievable.
Norristown, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. And he says, all right, we get somebody on base. He says, he sends Earl Hershiser back, and Gibson has the ball on the tee. Crack, crack, crack off the tee. Takes maybe four or five. And Hershiser, he looks at Hershiser, he says, I can hit. Go tell Tommy. So Hershiser goes sprinting down the runway. And all of a sudden, when he gets to the edge of the runway, Doug slows down and does the walk, the real cool walk. And he leans over and goes, Tommy Gibby says I can hit. And so he says, look, we get somebody on base. Okay, wait. So I guess what, Mike Davis got on base, right? And Mel Didier. This, I mean, scouts are so good. And remember, this is before interleague play, so you really had to scout the opposing team. Yeah, you didn't have a look at them firsthand because, like, for example, say the Dodgers and Red Sox, say they get through. Okay? They played each other this year. Right? So they already have some advanced scouting on each other. Yeah, as an example. But, of course, back then there was no interleague play, so this is the first time you saw them. Didier's scouting report said that when it's 3-2 and a runner on base, Eckersley always threw a backdoor slider. And if you watch the tape, Gibson steps out of the box before the pitch. And that's exactly what he was thinking about, that Mel Didier said he'll throw a backdoor slider in this spot.
And it's just funny because he kind of pokes it.
Yeah, well, but he knew what pitch. Right. Based on the scouting report, he had a good idea of what pitch was going to be there. That was scouting. But like Hershiser, I go sprinting down. They go right. He's gonna hit. They get to the top of the guy. Slow down. Walks over. Right, and then Lasorda told him. He says, "Look, don't have him come to sit on the bench. Have him stand in the runway. I don't want them to see him to think he's gonna hit." The wheels turn. Now, everybody, you know, people remember they happened to be in certain points. I know exactly where I was. I was at the Beaver Stadium press box. Penn State was playing a night game against Syracuse, which, by the way, they lost. They lost to Syracuse the year before, and everybody thought, well, 1988 is going to come right at Beaver Stadium. Penn State will get even back on track with these guys. No, Penn State lost the game. And I'd done the post-game show with Joe and went back to the press box, got up there. I remember I got off the elevator, and he came up to the plate. So I just stopped. I said, well, I might as well watch this and see, you know, what's, you know, what the deal is. And I'm watching, hear the home run. I'm like going, well, isn't that something?
I remember watching that live as well, and my father was
a big
Dennis Eckersley fan. And He was enjoying Eckersley coming in the game, and I remember him saying was when Gibson swings, he goes, game over.
Yeah. Ball game over. Then I remember game two, they did that great juxtaposition between Robert Redford's The Natural and then Gibson all the way through.
I did see, you know, that. That was pretty cool.
Plus, Redford in the movie hits left-handed.
Yes, he does. And he hits the light. And the light explodes. Great baseball movie, by the way.
You know what the light exploding reminds me of?
What?
You after all your teams lose.
Oh. No, that's after they win.
Please, don't try to make a positive. Everybody knows.